Hello, this is your Sun Sounds volunteer reader Wallace Kleindienst in Flagstaff with Northland Views. I'll be reading from the White Mountain Independent today. First headline, Building Overhaul, Fire Safety, and SLMS at Solo Council Meeting. Article by Tony Gibbons, staff writer, dated March 24th. On March 18th, the Solo City Council approved a significant construction contract for the city campus training building, with Councilman Brant Clark casting the sole dissenting vote. The project, which will see the remodeling of the 9,000-square-foot building, has been awarded to LD&B LLC and is not to exceed $1,622,739. Public Works Director Bill Kopp presented the proposal, saying, "The existing building has a new roof and windows, but all the plumbing and electrical will be replaced as part of the project. The building will have offices, cubicles, a break room, restrooms, classrooms, a public foyer, a file storage copier room, and other spaces identified during the programming process." Clark voiced strong opposition, criticizing decisions by former councils that led to the current situation, stating, "It's been an eyesore and a pain in the butt, and now we were stuck with spending $1.6 million on the building. The last time we talked about this building, I asked if we just couldn't bulldoze it. I think the previous council was short-sighted in acquiring this property because they're trying to do things on the cheap, and when we do that, we end up spending more money." Clark went on to say, "I hope in the future, when we are looking to acquire or do large-scale properties, that we don't get in the mindset that we're going to buy an old rickety building and turn it into something great. We could have done so much better." No other comments were made. Clark did note his thanks to staff for their work in the project, saying, "This is not a reflection on anyone on our staff or the work they have done." Arizona Public Service Northeast Manager Joe Weathersby, with Public Affairs Manager Janet Dean, gave an update to the ongoing fire mitigation efforts employed by Arizona Public Service. Joe Weathersby detailed the recent advancements in grid hardening, a key aspect of APS's strategy to improve system resilience and prevent wildfires. He went on to say, "In the past decade, we've made significant changes. Outside of fire season, our system attempts to restore power up to 3 times automatically if a fault clears. However, during fire season, we adjust this to a single attempt to avoid inadvertently starting a fire. APS has also implemented protective measures like mesh pole wrapping that seals itself upon contact with fire and current limiting fuses designed to capture and contain sparks from electrical faults." Dean added details about the technological integration into APS's wildfire mitigation efforts, stating, "Currently we have 48 total cameras and 87 weather stations, with plans to install 15 more AI cameras across northern Arizona by May 1st. Our AI cameras are linked directly into the dispatch centers, which enhances our response times significantly." Dean recounted an incident in Prescott when their AI cameras detected a fire start, saving crucial hours for response teams. She said, "These two cameras, which can cover up to 25 miles per camera, overlapped on that visual, allowing us to triangulate and direct first responders to the exact location swiftly." Dean also gave updates to the Public Safety Power Shutoff Program, which is an important component of their wildfire mitigation strategy. This allows for shutdown of power lines during extreme fire danger conditions to prevent wildfires. Approximately 65 feeder lines considered high risk are monitored for potential shutoffs. Dean said, "We've expanded our PSPS protocol significantly. It's a precise tool used under specific high-risk conditions to ensure public safety. The program is designed to affect the fewest numbers of customers possible, focusing on areas where fire risks are most prevalent. Dean noted that in the past 6 years, APS has only had to call a PSPS about four times in northern Arizona, making it a rare event. If a shutoff is necessary, outages are expected to last around 20 hours on average, and customers will be alerted days before the event. To stay prepared, Dean encouraged customers to sign up for county emergency alerts and ensure their contact information is up to date at aps.com/psps. Mayor John Leach Jr. briefly commented on the APS presentation, suggesting that burying power lines could be a more effective long-term solution to mitigate wildfire risks. The council received an update from Sholo Main Street. President Brian Martin and events manager Denise Stowe discussed the organization's contributions to the community, including support for local events and enhancements like new bollards and benches. Stowe recapped successful events from the past year, noting significant community engagement and upcoming activities planned for 2025. Stowe said that nearly 2,000 people attended the Battle of the Bands and that the first Deuces Gone Wild Picking Up Your Boots casino night had about 125 people attending with barbecue supplied by the Cowboy Way Barbecue. Per Nick Kickies donated all the desserts, and we had Ashley Westcott, who performed with Stone County. The Halloween Trunk or Treat had over 5,000 people in attendance. We had a kids' zone with a 40-by-40 haunted house, food vendors, and about 36 trucks that gave out over 300,000 pieces of candy, Stowe said. The Santa Winter Wonderland Craft Fair did well as well. Martin added, "One Saturday, we had over 1,000 people at the Main Street Farmers Market. Some are local, but we draw in a wide variety of people from different areas." This year, the Main Street Farmers Market starts on May 10th, with about 60 vendors signed up along with food trucks and entertainment. The second casino night, with Deuces Gone Wild at the Sholo Elks Lodge, will be on June 28th. August 30th will feature the Battle of the Bands and Food Vans with the Halloween Trunk or Treat on October 25th and Santa's Winter Wonderland Craft Fair on December 5th and 6th. The council meets at 7 in the evening on the first and third Tuesday of each month at the Sholo Council Chamber at 181 North 9th Street. The next headline, Snowflake Man Charged with Attempted Second-Degree Murder and Shooting. Article by staff report, dated March 17th, updated on March 20th. A Snowflake man has been charged with attempted second-degree murder and a number of other charges in a shooting that occurred on March 8th, according to the Snowflake Taylor Police Department. Officers responded at 3:32 in the morning on March 8th to a report of a man lying bleeding in the front yard of a home on South Savage Street, according to a press release from the department dated March 17th. When they arrived, they found a 20-year-old man with multiple gunshot wounds lying in the yard. The man was transported to Summit Healthcare Sholo and later flown to Phoenix for advanced medical care. Officers determined that Michael Ruiz, age 54, of Snowflake, had allegedly fired multiple shots after getting into an argument. They were told that Ruiz and another person were still inside the home. Ruiz allegedly refused to send her to police, and the White Mountain Regional Special Response Team was called to help due to the possibility of Ruiz being armed and refusing to leave the home. After several hours and numerous attempts to communicate with Ruiz and anyone else inside the home, Ruiz exited the house and was taken into custody without further incident. After taking Ruiz into custody, officers found an 18-year-old victim who was allegedly assaulted with a gun and a baseball bat while trying to protect the first victim from additional harm. On March 11th, a Navajo County grand jury indicted Ruiz on charges of attempted second-degree murder, two counts of aggravated assault, one count of misconduct with a weapon, and tampering with physical evidence. The next headline, Sachs singing in symphonies at the White Mountain Symphonic Orchestra concert on Saturday. Article by Anna McCleave, dated March 25th. The White Mountain Symphony Orchestra will present their concerto concert at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on March 29th at the Sholo High School Auditorium at 1201 North Cougar Lane in Sholo. Featuring concerto winners Eva Cornelson, Sholo High School soprano, performing O Mio Bambino Caro, and Brian Flores from the University of Arizona on the saxophone, performing Classical Concerto for Saxophone and Orchestra, Second Movement. Additional concert selections will include Mars, The Bringer of War by Gustav Holst from The Planets, Magdalena by Ernesto Lecona, Opening Night by Brian Balmages, The Model by Dedrich Semeta, and Over the Rainbow by Harold Arlen, arranged by Truk Serre. Tickets are $10 for adults, $5 for youths age 5 to 18, and are available in advance at the Chambers of Commerce in Sholo, Snowflake Taylor, Pine Top Lakeside City Hall, and the Symphony website at WMSO.org. Tickets will also be available at the door. There will be a raffle drawing at the intermission with a variety of services, especially handcrafted items and gift cards donated by local businesses and individuals. Raffle tickets are $1 each or 6 for $5 in the lobby prior to the concert. Eva Cornelson moved to Sholo in June of 2020 from Kingman, Arizona. She is 18 years old and a senior at Sholo High School. The third of four daughters in her family, she has grown up loving music and singing, playing, and performing from a young age. Her love of choir blossomed in middle school and junior high. She has also been actively involved in several musical theater productions and has most notably played the leading roles of Esther in Meet Me in St. Louis in 2023 and the role of Christine in Phantom of the Opera in 2024 with Sholo High School. She is a proud member of the elite showbiz choir at Sholo High School, where she is a soprano and two-year section leader. She has qualified for regional choir all 4 years of high school and has been the first chair in the soprano section in the Northeastern region her junior and senior year. She has progressed to qualify for all-state choir her sophomore and junior years and hopes to be able to qualify this year as well. Cornelson has also had an indispensable number of mentors and teachers in her life. Her choir directors, Dee Wilkins, Cynthia Whipple, and voice teachers Scott Gentry and Julie Turvey have been essential to her growth and development as a musician, for which she is more grateful than words can express. She plans to attend BYU-Idaho, majoring in music education, following her service as a full-time missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints this fall. She treasures this opportunity to corroborate and perform with the White Mountain Symphony and Orchestra. In the next headline, Springerville Council denies rezone for commercial expansion behind Main Street. An article by Jen Maria, staff writer, dated March 24th. A rezone request to convert nearly 7 acres of agricultural land into commercial property behind West Main Street was denied by the Springerville Town Council at their March 19th meeting. The proposal sought to rezone a portion of land directly behind 262 West Main Street from agricultural residential general commercial use. The applicant presented plans to build an upscale RV park on the site with 50 double slots and amenities intended to attract long-term and seasonal visitors. Council members expressed concern that once the land was rezoned to commercial, it could be sold or repurposed for a different type of business down the line. Without legal mechanisms in place to tie the rezone strictly to the RV park proposal, they felt the change posed too great a risk to the residential nature of the surrounding neighborhood. Several residents spoke during the public hearing, voicing concerns about increased traffic, safety, and the general effect a commercial property could have on nearby homes. Resident said, "The lot directly abuts several homes and worried about headlights, noise, and nighttime activity disturbing families who have lived in the neighborhood for decades." Others questioned whether the town had considered the long-term implications of inserting a commercial operation in what is currently a quiet residential area. Some also raised concerns about water usage and drainage. But not all feedback was negative. Several residents voiced support for the proposed RV park, highlighting the need for more affordable housing options and the economic boost that could come with increased tourism and long-time visitors. Supporters suggested that the development could bring new revenue and vitality to the town without placing an undue burden on existing infrastructure. They noted the applicant's willingness to be transparent and to work with the town throughout the process as a positive sign of responsible development. Council members noted the incompatibility of commercial development in an area primarily surrounded by residential parcels and raised fears about setting a precedent by approving zoning changes without a guarantee on project follow-through and denied the application. In the next headline, Forest Service lays off recreation staff. An article by Peter Alshire, Consulting Publications Editor, dated March 22nd and updated on March 24th. The Tonnell National Forest terminated most of its recreation staff, only to place a 45-day hold on the terminations after the employees had already been let go. If the terminations of all the most recently hired employees stand, the North Zone Recreation Program of the Tonto National Forest likely would not have enough workers to open many of the dozens of campgrounds and day-use areas this summer. The situation remains unresolved at press time. Union representatives notified terminated workers that the Forest Service is working through restoring computer and account privileges and will provide back pay, but the terminated workers should wait to receive notice before actually returning to work, according to copies of the notice obtained by the Payson Roundup newspaper. The Trump administration had ordered the Forest Service to fire all of its probationary employees hired within the last 2 years and therefore lacking full civil service protection. This involved about 3,500 employees out of a workforce of 30,000. However, the regional office reversed the order, apparently in response to a ruling by U.S. District Court Judge William Alsup, who called the terminations in six federal agencies a sham and in violation of federal law. The Payson Roundup sought comment on the initial layoffs from the Tonto National Forest, where a recorded message said the office was closed. The Payson Ranger District referred the questions to the regional office in Albuquerque. The regional press office on Thursday by email said, "We received your inquiry from our colleagues in Region 3 and are responding to the inquiry posted at the bottom of this message. Here's what we can share at this time." On Wednesday, March 5th, the Merit Systems Protection Board issued a 45-day stay on the termination of U.S. Department of Agriculture probationary employees. In total, the Tonto National Forest had about 18 employees that were terminated who were recently reinstated. We don't have any additional information to share at this time. A follow-up question by email generated an automated response that said to contact the local Forest Service office for information. The terminations of all the newly hired workers in the Tonto National Forest, if upheld, could have a devastating effect on the region's tourist-oriented economy. the cuts would appear to leave the Forest Service without enough staff to open any of the dozens of campgrounds and day use areas, which last year generated more than $1.2 million in fees. In the next article, Protect Your Pup with Rattlesnake Aversion Training by Mary Taylor, special to the White Mountain Independent, dated March 24th. Each year in this country, between 150,000 and 300,000 pets are bitten by rattlesnakes. According to ArizonaRattlesnake.com, a great many of these pets are dogs, who by nature are very curious animals. To help keep our furry canine friends safe, aversion training is the key. We train your dog one-on-one and not in a group setting, said Ben Shakespeare, owner and operator of Canine Rattlesnake Aversion Training in Payson. We use live, muzzled rattlesnakes to maximize the success of our training. This is reinforced with rattlesnake scents and sounds. Shakespeare said that they use negative association through an e-collar, which gives a small electrical stimulation to the dog's neck muscle. When you think electricity, it seems a lot more violent and painful than what this is, but it's a lot better than a rattlesnake bite, Shakespeare said. So we let the dogs go up and explore the muzzled rattlesnake, which is out in the open and not caged or anything like that. It's just out and about doing its thing, and the dog goes up and explores it. When the dog gets near enough to the snake, a mild shock is administered through the e-collar, which fools the dog into thinking it's been bitten. In addition to muzzled snakes and e-collars, there's a multimedia experience that further enhances the aversion training. We want to make sure that they understand what a rattlesnake sounds like and smells like without actually having to see a snake, Shakespeare said. We do that by hiding Bluetooth speakers in piles of sticks or rubble and playing the rattle sound, so that when the dog approaches, we can see if they respond to just the sounds without the visual stimuli of the snake. We do the same thing with smell. We hide rattlesnake scent in a similar fashion and let the dog have a sniff and see if they can notice the smell of the rattlesnake before they get too close. That's when they get that stimulation again, that fake rattlesnake bite. You're tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you're listening to Northland Views. Turning to the Painted Desert Tribune, the headline is Cholla Ends Power Generation After More Than Six Decades, a staff report dated March 26th. Hundreds of thousands of travelers pass the Cholla Generating Station every year as they drive along Interstate 40 watching its towers stretch above the desert landscape. Last week, after more than six decades of serving communities across Arizona, the plant fully closed its coal-burning operations. Its origins date to the nearly early 1960s, when construction began on Unit 1 in Joseph City. By the early 1980s, the site had grown to include four distinct units, each one marking a stage in the evolution of Arizona's energy needs. The boilers were fed with coal from mines near Window Rock, but on the other side of the New Mexico border. In those busier years, Cholla produced enough electricity to power more than 160,000 homes, a feat that required the efforts of at least 250 employees. Over the years, the Joseph City Unified School District benefited from the tax dollars and community support generated by plant operations, which helped fund local programs and services. Its departure from active service leaves behind a legacy forged by the people who worked there and the community that continues to reflect on its decades of economic and community contribution. Operations began to shift in recent years as Arizona Public Service weighed economic realities, regulatory guidelines, and the broader shift towards renewables and other lower-cost options. One of the units was retired in 2016, and another owned by PacifiCorp shut down in 2020. These steps gradually reduce the plant's output and staffing needs. Now, APS says 56 employees are still employed at Cholla and will be working on finalizing the retirement of the plant. In time, additional decisions may be made about retrofitting or repurposing the site, but for now, APS will retain ownership and maintain the existing infrastructure, including Cholla Lake, in order to allow flexibility of any future energy endeavors. Many in the region remember how significant the plant was for local employment and growth, even as they look ahead to the possibilities that might emerge with the property's next chapter. And turning to sports in the Painted Desert Tribune, the Bulldogs feel the Cougars' bite in a 16-5 loss in a baseball game played on March 18th. Story by Kay Connor. On March 18th, the Winslow Bulldogs hosted the Cougars of Sholo in a very cold and windy evening. In the top of the first inning, the Cougars would score two runs with a Landon Erickson RBI signal along with an unearned run. In the top of the second inning, the Cougars would add on four runs with a Cash Perkins RBI single, an Erickson 2 RBI single, and one unearned run. In the top of the fifth, the Cougars scored two runs with a Mason Bigos RBI signal and one unearned run. In the bottom of the fifth, the Winslow Bulldogs would score their five runs of the game with a Jay Smith 2 RBI singles, a Zach Sanchez RBI single, a Brody Knight RBI single, and one unearned run. In the top of the sixth, the Cougars would get an unearned run. And then in the top of the seventh, the Cougars would score seven runs with a Corbin Greenwood RBI single, Erickson scoring on a ground out, Greenwood scoring on a ground out, and a Parker Erickson RBI single with three unearned runs. The final score was Sholo 16, Winslow 5. Winslow used three pitchers, Brendan Knight, along with Wesley Reed, each with four strikeouts, and Eli Ferris with two strikeouts. I'm your volunteer reader, Wallace Kleindienst in Flagstaff. This has been Northland Views. Thank you for listening and have a great day.